with the sweep and fury of the resurrection. There's a new world a-coming. Every Sunday at this hour, WMCA, in cooperation with the Citywide Citizens Committee on Harlem, brings you a series of vivid programs dramatizing the inner meanings of Negro life, based on the prize-winning bestseller, New World A-Coming, by Roy Oatley. Today, the story of Negroes and Health, starring Canada Lee as Tim Jones, sharecropper, with Georgia Burke as Emily, his wife, and Alexander Scurvy as narrator. Written by Mr. Oatley, produced and directed by Mitchell Grayson.
A boatload of nonsense is told about the Negro's health, or ill health. Popular theories say that Negroes are a dying race, bound to lose out in the struggle for survival. Some declare that Negroes breed like rabbits. Others maintain that Negroes have a peculiar lack of resistance to disease that is distinctly racial. Well, such theories have been proven to be scientifically wrong. But promoters of race prejudice ignore truth. Instead, they gather ponderous statistics to bolster this or that point of view. What actually is wrong with the health of a great section of the Negro population is our story today.
Hey, say, did you hear about Tim Jones being dead?
Tim Jones dead? Are you kidding?
Why, that's powerfully hard to believe. What was the matter? Accident or something? Well, no, they tell me he died from TB.
TB? Huh. You must be joking. That's impossible. Listen, I worked with Tim the other day, and he was husky and healthy as any one of us. TB? I don't believe it. That sounds impossible.
Impossible? Well, it ain't so impossible. He's dead.
Tuberculosis is the greatest killer of Negroes. Today, nearly a half million Negroes throughout the United States are suffering with the disease. Now, these are obviously disquieting figures. So let's poke among the ruins of Tim Jones' life, which is fairly typical, and see what happened. Perhaps the answer lies there. Tim was a sharecropper on the Kennedy Plantation in the Deep South. One day, Tim's employer, Mr. Kennedy, received a visit from a government health officer.
Sir, I don't like your meddling in my private business. Now, say what you have to and get going.
Mr. Kennedy, I'm afraid I must speak to you in all frankness. I've looked around your plantation very carefully, and the conditions under which the Negroes live is something horrible.
What you say, sir?
I say if you don't do something quick, you'll have an epidemic of some kind in your hands.
But I have done things. Many things. I screened the Negro cabins to keep out malaria mosquitoes. And a couple of years ago, I had some of them vaccinated against typhoid.
Yes, but why don't you screen those privies? Those miserable hovels in which they live. Why, they're not fit for pigs. Why, you have two or three families sleeping and eating in one cabin.
Now, you ain't fixing on telling me to treat them Negroes same as white, is you, sir?
I'm only telling you that you wouldn't have a health problem if you treated them as human beings. And not as cattle.
This, sir, is a matter of dollars and cents. I know it don't pay to keep sick livestock, but sickly Negroes. Now, that's something else.
I know, but Mr. Kennedy, you've got a responsibility to these
people. Sir, let me tell you something. I called the croppers together once and told them I had the healthiest mules in the South. And I didn't want them driven by men coughing and spitting all over the place. I said, you ought to be as good as your mule. Now, you see that old woman over there?
Yes.
Ain't seen a day in school, but bright as a whip. Well, last year her grandson, Tim Jones, was racking with cold. Could hardly drag himself around. I gave him a little medicine, and now he does as good a day's work as any man in the place. I'll call her over. Hey, Susie.
Yes?
Come here. I want you to talk to this government man. He's got some wrong idea about the way you colored folk is treated here in the plantation.
Yes, sir.
Tell me about your grandson, Susie. Mr. Kennedy says he's been pretty sick.
Martin, he only got the indigestus. It just takes in that way every time he got a little cold. Well, he'll start coughing, and it hurts him all in his chest. And you can hear him trying to get his breath, and it just has that indigestus with it every time. Sometime I fix up a little mare's milk or herbs, and I rubs his chest with kerosene. Then he's fine. Oh, ain't nothing to it.
Now, it sounds to me like Tim should be out of this slum. Maybe in a sanatorium.
Ain't nothing wrong with that, Negro. Nothing that a little work won't cure. Why, Tim's strong as a mule. Ain't he, Susie? He sure is. As strong as a mule.
Two years later, Tim Jones married Emily, a girl from the cabin next door. Two babies were born to them. They kept Emily and Tim poor as well as happy. But then one day they were to be saddened by the death of one of their children.
But, Doctor, is you sure it was TB?
Not sure, Mrs. Jones. But an autopsy might show something.
Tim, what do you think?
No, none of that. I ain't gonna let him cut up my baby. I don't believe in that TB know-how.
Anybody in the family ever have TB? How about you, Tim? Ever had a bad sickness?
Well, now, let me see now. No, I don't think so. A little cold now and again, but nothing real serious.
Tim, didn't your mother's brother have that galloping consumption when he lived here with us?
Yeah, but everyone knowed he picked that up traveling in them dirty Jim Crow trods.
Tim, have you ever been to a hospital to have your chest tested?
What's that?
X-ray.
Oh, that. No. I ain't had no time, Doc. Too much mouth to feed and food sky high. I still owes you money. You know old man Kennedy. He ain't paying nobody for time that takes off, sick or no sick.
Does he ever give you time to rest?
A little, but the most spare time I got, I've been using trying to build a room on this here cabin. I was getting mighty tired of all eating and sleeping and doing in one room.
Well, I think you should go to the hospital in town and let them have a look at your chest.
I don't know.
Well, that's up to you. Here's the death certificate for the child. Let me hear from you if you decide to go to the hospital.
I ain't going to no hospital. Mammy's herb tea and kerosene is all I need.
Well, good day. And I am sorry about the baby.
There you goes again, coughing and coughing. Why don't you do as that doctor says?
Oh, woman, there ain't nothing wrong with me. If I could go to that hospital down the road a piece, I wouldn't have to take off too much time from Mr. Kennedy's job. Who's got time to go 60 miles of town anyway?
Maybe they might do something at the hospital down the road if Mr. Kennedy speaks to them.
Now, Emily, you know better than that. That hospital for white folks only.
Well, I was only wondering.
You remember when them colored folks got injured on the road last week in that automobile accident? What did them white folks do?
You let them poor colored folks almost bleed themselves to death until the colored ambulance came 60 miles
hospital. Even then did they let them in this hospital here. No. They joyrided them all the way back to town to the colored hospital.
And a woman died, too.
Yeah, she sure did. And just last week, one of the boys was telling me she was a big college professor or something.
I just don't understand them kind of white folks.
Me neither. Treats colored people as though they're animals.
In a way, Tim, I don't blame you for not going to that dirty clinic back in town.
Yeah, and that ain't the worst of it. You know those white folks running the place that's got Negro men and women in the same room being examined?
Tain't right.
And you got to stand in the street for the dough before you's called in. Everybody walking along knows what you're sick with.
You don't need to say no more, Tim. I remember when I was there before the baby. The white doctor with the funny eye says to me, come over here, Amanda, and lift your dress. And he says that for all the folks looking, too.
That settles it. I ain't going to no hospital. I'll get Mammy to fix me up one of them herb potions.
A few years rolled by. Tim had been feeling none too well. He was losing weight. A day's work made him extremely tired. But Tim was like thousands of the simple folk isolated from modern health standards, with little education and no contact. One day, Tim managed to squeeze in a trip to town to bring back farm equipment. And while the truck was being loaded, Tim talked with a few of his city friends loitering around the warehouse.
Hey, well, man, that sounds like the graveyard.
Yeah, Tim, you best see a doc about that.
Oh, a little herb tea will make me okay.
Well, how long you been coughing that way?
Just a short time. Oh, it ain't nothing. Just been working too hard and smoking too much, I guess.
That's what you say. Well, if you'd ask me, I'd go find me a doctor, and quick. You know, city folks don't let that mess run like that.
Why, man, you could slip over there to the hospital in no time and be back time the loading was finished.
Yeah, man, go ahead. Go ahead. We'll watch your truck.
Tim finally got to the hospital. His condition was recognized immediately. He was given a complete examination. And while Tim waited in the anteroom, the doctor spoke with the head nurse.
Oh, yes. You're the new intern from New York. Dr. Cranston, is that right?
Yes. Your name is...
I'm Miss Ball, in charge of nurses.
Oh, I'm pleased to meet you, Miss Ball. This is my first day here. I'm afraid I'll have to lean heavily on you to steer me right.
Glad to be of service, Dr. Cranston.
Miss Ball, here's the diagnosis of Tim Jones' case. He's got an advanced tuberculosis. Been carrying it around for years. Needs to be hospitalized.
How soon, Doctor?
Oh, immediately. Matter of fact, he should have been hospitalized a long time ago.
I'm sorry, Doctor. There are no beds available.
But he's dying on his feet.
We have an awfully long waiting list.
Well, when do you think he can be taken in?
Oh, not for at least 6 months. And there's nothing certain about that.
What about that hospital across the square? They have spare beds there.
You don't mean the Bellevue.
I do.
Why, Dr. Cranston, you're forgetting you're in the South. Negroes are not admitted to white hospitals.
Even if the patient is in a critical condition?
It makes no difference. The races are separate in this part of the country.
I know, but the poor devil will spread the disease. His wife and child may become infected. Eventually infect white people, too.
Sorry. He'll just have to wait his turn like all the others.
This is barbarous. The people of the South don't want to admit Negroes to their hospitals, and why in thunder don't they provide
facilities for them? That's downright inequality. It has no place in medicine.
Why this inequality? Well, we know some of the reasons. Ignorance, indifference, and prejudice in many public officials. More important, though, is the fact that this attitude diminishes the chance of cure in those who contract any sort of disease, and they become a menace to the whole community. In the vast majority of cases, Negroes go unhospitalized because beds are not available. In one of the larger southern cities, nearly one-fourth of all Negroes die without medical care. This is the way in which a mayor of a southern city expressed himself to a group of citizens asking that a hospital for tuberculosis be erected in that city.
Ain't no point in building a TB sanitarium in this town, because white people never catch TB. And what's the use of building a sanatorium for colored people only?
The year that mayor made that statement, 1941, there were more than 100 white people who were active TB cases in his own city. 500 Negroes, also active TB cases, were walking about in the same city. Yet no hospital beds anywhere in the city were available to Negroes. Tim returned to the plantation a sick man, but he went on with his old ways of living. Hard work, poor diet, little rest. What else could he do? Meanwhile, Mr. Kennedy was getting increasingly annoyed with Tim's lack of efficiency.
Tim, what you doing there hiding and sleeping at the height of day?
Yes, sir, Mr. Kennedy.
I say, why ain't you doing no work?
I don't feel none too well, sir.
Nothing but that bad corn you Negroes is drinking Saturday nights.
You know I don't drink, sir.
Well, I ain't paying you to sleep in the sun all day.
I'll make it up, sir.
You've been saying that for months. If you ask me, you was just a lazy, no-count Negro. Now get up from there and get back to work.
But, Mr. King...
Come on, get up! Get up!
All right. I was getting up.
What's wrong with you, Negro?
I got moths in my lungs.
Hey, Susie.
Yes?
Come on and get this no-count grandson of yours.
Yes, sir.
Drunk?
No, sir. Tim's just burned out. Worn down to a frazzle. He's just taken a long journey.
Nonsense. Now, let me see. Tim, now wake up. Wake up, Pedro.
Why, the no-trifling Negro is dead.
Something has been omitted from Tim Jones' story, the story of thousands and thousands of Negroes. It's the story of what happens to the whites.
Why, Mr. Kennedy, you've got the pip.
I needs a little rest, Susie, that's all. Ain't been feeling good lately.
If you don't mind my saying so, sir, that cough sounds mighty much like my poor boy Tim.
Tim died a few years ago, and Mr. Kennedy is on the verge of death today, all through lack of proper medical care and facilities. But recently, a start has been made in the right direction. People in America are beginning to receive the sort of care, attention, and education necessary to good living. These are needed for national efficiency, especially in a nation at war. Even in the Deep South, there are agencies carrying the banner for civic rights and health for Negroes as well as white people. If Tim Jones were alive today, and had he taken his truck into town to bring back some farm equipment, his city friends may have talked to him like this.
Hello there, Tim. How you been?
Oh, so-so, Charlie.
Yeah, what's the note, Tim?
Oh, nothing much. How's things with you, Shorty?
Oh, man, I can't complain. Say... I see you still got that cough,
Tim. Yeah, can't get rid of it.
Why, man, that sounds like a graveyard. If you ask me, you better check it quick.
Oh, a little broth will make me okay.
Broth? Man, you need an x-ray.
Yeah, where am I going to get that? Where? You know a place?
Mm-hmm. Listen, we's members of the Sharecroppers Union, and we've been finding out things about that. Why, yeah, man, the union ain't waiting for the city to give x-rays. They brings them to the workers. Mm-hmm. Every month, too. You know one thing? Lots of us boys caught that mess in time. Say, country, you is lucky. Why, just today the union had an x-ray truck. That ain't what they call it. Who says not? Me. It's called mobile truck. Oh, well, a mobile truck. Well, and then it's an x-ray machine just outside the union hall across the way.
Is that it? That big white truck?
Oh, yeah. Why, man, you could slip over there in no time and be back time the loading was finished.
Well,
Yeah, man, go ahead. Hey, Charlie. Charlie here watch the truck. Come on, I'll go with you. Come on.
Well, okay, let's go.
Yes, unions in the South, notably the CIO, are bringing the advantages of modern medical science to their membership, no longer waiting for the community to give this service. So too are the United States Public Health Service and the TB Associations bringing education and health facilities to workers, white and black alike. Prejudice is being overcome. Oddly enough, but there is a beginning. There has been an increase in the number of hospital beds, and there has been an educational program set in motion in schools throughout the South. We're glad to report that it is reaching into the corners and crevices of American life to produce good health. This is the trend today. You've been listening to New World A-Coming, written by Roy Otley and starring Canada Lee as Tim Jones, sharecropper, with Georgia Burke as Emily, his wife, and Alexander Scorby as narrator. We invite you to be with us again next Sunday at 3:03, when New World A-Coming will have as its guest star Canada Lee, with Joseph Julian in the story of the Negro and labor. New World A-Coming, based upon Mr. Otley's book with the same name, is produced and directed by Mitchell Grayson. Music by James Lozito was conducted by Jerry Sears. The theme song was composed by Duke Ellington. Members of the cast today were Betty Burghardt as Susie, Loreen Scott as the nurse, Andrew Pendleton as Shorty, Fred Carter as Charlie, Richard Coogan as the intern, Sanford Bickert as Mr. Kennedy, John Adair as the doctor. Your announcer, George Willard. This was a public service feature of WMCA. Ladies and gentlemen, the American Red Cross is asking for your support now. Perhaps you know something about the vast activities of the Red Cross in wartime, how the Red Cross helps the wounded, sends food parcels to war prisoners, gets blood plasma for the armed services, maintains hundreds of permanent and traveling clubs and entertainment centers all over the world. The Red Cross is carrying on its great work of peacetime disaster relief, too. In the last fiscal year, the Red Cross gave relief in 259 floods, tornadoes, fires, and other disasters on the home front. Now the American Red Cross must have a minimum of $200 million. The Red Cross is coming to you. To you, Mr. and Mrs. America, for the funds it must have to carry on its constantly expanding activity. Give and give generously to the Red Cross. Make your gift as big as your heart. This is America's leading independent station.